Fragments of Tomorrow from My Imagination by Emilio N. Williams. Introduction. There are moments, fleeting yet profound, when something stirs within you, a whisper of familiarity in the unknown, a sensation like déjà vu, pulling at the edges of your consciousness. Perhaps it's a dream you can't quite remember, or a passion you once felt, but buried beneath doubt, hesitation, or the weight of the world's expectations. This is a story of resistance, the silent battle between who we are and who we fear to become. It's about the dreams we abandon, the truths we run from, and the versions of ourselves we refuse to face. But it's also about revelation, the moment when everything unspoken demands to be heard. This is your story, my story, our story, a story of standing at the crossroads of fear and purpose and daring to take a step forward. Because in the end, the greatest adversary we face is often the reflection staring back at us. Welcome to Fragments of Tomorrow. Chapter 1. The Signs We Ignore. The city hummed like a machine, a steady rhythm of car horns, neon lights, and restless movement. It was a place where people vanished, not in the literal sense, but in a way that left them hollow, like ghosts still going through the motions of being alive. Jonas Reed sat at the edge of a dimly lit cafe, absently stirring a cup of coffee gone cold. His reflection in the window stared back. A man in his late 30s, worn eyes, unshaven, dressed in a suit that felt more like a disguise than an identity. He had once dreamt of building something, art, music, meaning, but somewhere along the way, he'd traded it for spreadsheets and an office view that overlooked nothing. Across the city, Myra Ellison sat on a park bench, flipping through an old notebook. The pages were filled with sketches, song lyrics, ideas for a novel she never wrote. She was 34 now, working a job she tolerated, living a life that felt borrowed. Every now and then, she felt something stir deep within her, like a whisper from a past self, trying to remind her of something important. Neither Jonas nor Myra knew it yet, but something was about to shake them out of their fog. Struggling along similar pathways, Jonas and Myra were about to meet. Bells would begin to ring, and small thoughts of familiarity would begin to surface. Someone once said that there is no such thing as a coincidence. "Have you ever felt like you have been here before? Said the same things, saw the same people, or some weird feeling?" I remember saying on more than one occasion, "Something told me not to go in there." And yet I did and said what I said after, never really paying attention of noticing what I notice. The first sign or indication started subtly. For Jonas, it was a name, his own, scrawled in unfamiliar handwriting on a sticky note inside his office drawer. Below it, a question. "Do you remember?" The note jarred him a bit and brought about some confusion. Was someone playing a joke? Did they know something they were withholding? Did he forget an appointment? Someone's birthday? He was baffled and decided to step out for a few and go for a walk. For Myra, it was a melody, one she had written years ago, but never played aloud, humming softly from a street musician's violin as she walked home. The tune stopped her in her tracks, an ache forming in her chest. She approached the violinist, an older man with gray in his beard and knowing eyes. "Where did you learn that?" she asked, her voice barely above a whisper. The man only smiled. Some songs find their way back to where they belong. He lowered his head, returned to his music, and resumed the soft melody. Myra was freaking out a bit and saw a bookstore ahead and decided to go in. Maybe she would find something that would lift her spirits out of the aching, lingering feeling she had, as if she had lost something. One out to clear his mind, the other looking for something to put on her mind. Jonas and Myra strolled along the same street, oblivious to one another's presence or aim. They met that same evening, drawn to a small bookstore on the corner of Lenox and Fifth, a place neither had been before, but somehow felt familiar. Jonas entered first, compelled by a flickering neon sign that read Chasing Shadows. Myra arrived minutes later, still unsettled by the violinist's words. Inside, the shelves were filled with old books, handwritten letters tucked between pages, and a faint smell of incense lingering in the air. The shopkeeper, an older woman with silver streaks in her dark hair, glanced up as they entered. "You're both late," she said, as if she'd been expecting them. Jonas and Myra exchanged a glance. "Excuse me?" Jonas asked. "Sit," she said. "Read." The woman gestured toward a wooden table in the back. Two chairs, two envelopes, their names written on them. At this point, and without getting all freaked out, and willy-nilly, Jonas and Myra looked at each other, and maybe it was based on the fact that they both internally had the sense of seeking something, that they both thought that this must be the place, and wasn't just a coincidence. They looked at one another, and both agreed, "Let's do this. Let's see what this is about. Weird stuff has been happening all day, and maybe we can get to the bottom of this." Their hands trembled as they reached for the letters. Each contained the same message. "Your dreams didn't die, you buried them. Now, it's time to dig them up." Jonah's throat tightened. Myra exhaled sharply. "Who sent these?" Myra asked. The woman smiled faintly. "That's the mystery, isn't it?" Over the next few days, the city seemed to change around them. Jonas started noticing symbols carved into subway walls, sketches of things he once imagined creating. Myra kept hearing her own words, lyrics, lines from her abandoned novel, woven into conversations, graffiti, even advertisements. They weren't losing their minds. They were being led somewhere. But by what? By whom? And why now? The answers lay ahead, hidden beneath the layers of a city that never forgot its dreamers. Chapter 2. Whispers. Beneath the surface. Jonas couldn't stop staring at the letter. "Your dreams didn't die. You buried them. Now, it's time to dig them up." The words clung to him like a forgotten melody, something once familiar, but now distant. He turned the envelope over, searching for a clue, an address, anything. But there was nothing except his name, written in a style he couldn't quite place, yet felt eerily intimate. Across the table, Myra traced the ink of her own letter, a knot tightening in her stomach. The bookstore smelled of dust and aged pages, the air thick with something unspoken. The shopkeeper, the woman who had greeted them as if she'd been expecting them, watched with a patient knowing. "This is some kind of joke, right?" Myra asked, though her voice lacked conviction. The woman shook her head. "No joke, just something that was always meant to happen." Jonas exhaled sharply. "And who exactly are you?" The woman smiled, but it wasn't the kind that offered comfort. It was the kind that suggested answers wouldn't come easily. My name is not important, but if you must call me something, you can call me Eleanor. Myra crossed her arms. Okay, Eleanor, what exactly are we supposed to do with this? She held up the letter. Eleanor nodded toward the door. The city remembers. Follow where it leads. Jonas frowned. That's not an answer. Eleanor met his gaze. It's the only one you need. Before either of them could press further, the old bookstore bell chimed and the lights flickered. When they turned back, Eleanor was gone, disappearing into the depths of the shop as if she had never been there at all. Outside, the city felt different, the same streets, the same rush of traffic and neon glow, but something in the air had shifted. It was as if the world had leaned in just slightly, watching. Do you believe in fate? Myra asked as they walked aimlessly down Lenox Street. Jonas snorted. I believe in bad decisions and consequences. Fate, not so much. Myra smirked. That sounds like something someone who lost faith would say. Jonas shot her a look, but said nothing. Then, something caught his eye. A mural stretched across the side of a brick building, one he swore hadn't been there before. It was an intricate swirl of colors, figures in motion, but in the center, a distinct image, a notebook, and a paintbrush. Myra stopped short. She swallowed hard. That's mine. Jonas turned to her. What do you mean? She stepped closer, pressing her fingers against the cool brick. That sketch, it's mine. I drew it years ago in one of my old notebooks, but I never showed it to anyone. Jonas's skin prickled. Then how the hell is it here? Myra pulled out her phone and snapped a picture. She scrolled through her old photos, finally landing on an image of an aged, tattered notebook page. The drawing was identical. Jonas felt his pulse quicken. And then he saw it. A small, handwritten message tucked into the corner of the mural. Find the place where the song was first lost. Myra looked at him, her breath shallow. Jonas, what is this? He didn't have an answer. The message haunted them. Myra's song. Jonas' unfinished projects. Someone or something was leading them toward the pieces of themselves they had abandoned. They spent the next few hours tracing steps back through their past, but there was no clear path until Jonas remembered something. There was a place, he said suddenly. Myra arched an eyebrow. A place? He hesitated. Back when I still believed I'd do something meaningful, I used to go to this old building, an abandoned theater on 12th Street. I would sit there for hours, sketching out ideas, planning something that never happened. Myra studied him. And that's where you lost it. Jonas's jaw tightened. That's where I let it die. The decision was unspoken. They needed to go. The theater sat at the end of a desolate street, its once grand entrance now sagging under years of neglect. The marquee was shattered, the name barely legible beneath layers of grime. Myra exhaled. Creepy as hell. Jonas tried the door. It should have been locked, but it swung open with a quiet creak. A wave of dust and forgotten echoes greeted them. Inside, the air was thick with the scent of old wood and something else, something electric. The grand stage was covered in debris, but the moment they stepped inside, Myra gasped. On the stage sat a chair, a notebook, and a violin. Jonas felt a cold shiver run through him. No way. Myra moved toward the violin, her hands trembling. It was worn but intact. The bow rested neatly beside it. This, her voice caught, this is mine. Jonas reached for the notebook on the chair, flipping it open. It was his old sketchbook, the one he had left behind years ago. Myra turned to him. What the hell is happening? Before Jonas could respond, the theater lights flickered, and somewhere in the distance, a voice whispered, "You've come back." The air grew thick, charged. Then the doors slammed shut behind them. Chapter 3. The Weight of What Was Left Behind. The theater door slammed shut behind them, the echo swallowing the silence. Jonas and Myra stood frozen, the air thick with dust and something unseen. Myra clutched the violin, her fingers tracing the worn wood. It had been years since she last played. She remembered the final time vividly, an audition gone horribly wrong, the weight of expectation crushing her breath, the shaking of her bow as she faltered, missing note after note. The shame had burned so deep that she had walked away, never touching a violin again. Jonas sat heavily on the chair beside his old sketchbook. He flipped through the pages, designs, concepts, ideas. Each one carried a fragment of who he once was. He could still feel the sting of that one moment, the moment he knew he would never make it, the moment a professor had torn his work apart, calling it lacking originality, calling him incapable, the moment he stopped believing in himself. The lights flickered again, then a sound. Footsteps echoing from somewhere unseen. Myra and Jonas exchanged glances, muscles tensed, and then, from the shadows of the wings, a figure stepped forward. The man was tall, broad-shouldered, with a presence that felt both heavy and unshakable. His sharp eyes held no pity, only expectation. "You left too soon," he said, his voice deep, unrelenting. Jonas swallowed hard. "Who the hell are you?" The man folded his arms. "I am determination." Silence. Myra let out a short, disbelieving laugh. "Right. And I suppose Hope is going to walk through that door next." Determination's expression didn't waver. "Hope won't come unless you're willing to believe in it, and neither of you are." Jonas rubbed his temples. "This is ridiculous. We're talking to a guy who calls himself Determination. That's exactly why you failed." Jonas froze. Determination stepped closer. "Both of you had the ability. Both of you had the drive. But when things became hard, when doubt crept in, when someone told you that you weren't enough, you let it define you. You abandoned what was yours." His voice grew sharper. "Not because you weren't capable, but because you chose to stop fighting." Myra clenched her jaw. "You don't know anything about what I went through. Neither of us know what you're talking about." Determination turned to her. "Don't I?" His gaze was piercing. "That last audition. You didn't fail because you weren't talented. You failed because you didn't believe you deserved to succeed. You let one bad moment erase years of passion." Myra's throat tightened. He turned to Jonas. "And you? How many others took criticism and used it to get better? But you? You let one person's opinion bury you." Jonas felt his breath grow unsteady. Determination took a step back, his presence unwavering. You're looking for your lost dreams, but they were never lost. They were abandoned. And unless you face why you left them behind, you'll never find them again. Then, just as quickly as he had appeared, he turned and walked into the darkness. And this time, the silence that followed was suffocating. Jonas and Myra sat in the dim light of the theater, the weight of Determination's words pressing down on them. "Do you think he was right?" Myra finally asked, her voice quiet. Jonas exhaled. "I don't know. Maybe." He ran a hand over his face. I think I was afraid of proving them right, that I wasn't good enough." Myra traced the edge of the violin, "and I was afraid of proving them wrong. Because then, what if I still wasn't happy?" The silence stretched between them, thick with unspoken truths. Then, from somewhere in the rafters, a whisper, software, elusive. "If you could see me, you wouldn't need me." Both of them turned sharply. The voice came again, barely more than a breath in the dark. "You search for something you don't believe in." Myra's skin prickled. "Who's there?" A figure began to emerge, but only in fragments. Not fully seen, never quite there. A presence that flickered in and out, like a candle in the wind. Jonas's voice was barely above a whisper. "Hope." The figure tilted its head, neither confirming nor denying. Myra stood slowly. You're not really here." A small chuckle. "And yet, you are looking for me." Hope was intangible. Something felt more than seen. The flickering shape stepped closer, but it never fully materialized. "You distrust me," it said, not accusing, just stating. "Because you think I am deception, a trick of the mind, a lie you once believed in, only to be disappointed." Myra's throat tightened. Hope's voice softened. "You wanted to believe you would make it, that you were meant for something more. And when it slipped away, when you fell, you convinced yourself that trusting me had been your mistake." Jonas swallowed hard. "You weren't there when we needed you." Hope's presence wavered, flickering like a signal, cutting in and out. "I was there, but you were too consumed with what you lost to see me." Myra felt something stir inside her, an ache she had buried deep. And now, Hope hesitated. Then the whisper came again. "Now, you must decide if you're ready to see me again." And just like that, the presence faded, slipping back into the shadows. Jonas and Myra stood in the dim theater, their hearts pounding. They weren't ready to piece everything together yet, but for the first time in years, something had stirred, a memory, a feeling, the faintest trace of hope. Chapter 4, The Bridge of Faith. The city stretched before Jonas and Myra, a maze of neon lights and shifting shadows. Despite its noise, they felt eerily quiet inside, disconnected from the passions they once carried so fiercely. They had spent days unpacking their past, wrestling with the choices that had led them here. They had found determination, steady and relentless, but without direction, it had felt like a burden rather than a strength. Hope had once been their beacon, but after too many disappointments, it had dimmed to little more than a trickster's whisper. Then, on a night when they least expected it, they met Faith. During a moment of reflection and chill time, they stopped into the cafe, small with the hum of conversation blending with the rain tapping against the window. Jonas stirred his coffee, deep in thought. Myra traced circles on the table, lost in her own spiral of frustration. That's when they saw her. She sat with an effortless calm, sipping her tea, her presence both familiar and foreign. Something about her made them take notice, not because she was loud, but because she was unshaken. When their eyes met, she smiled knowingly and stood, walking over to their table as if she had been waiting for this moment all along. "You've been looking for me," she said, "even if you don't realize it." Jonas frowned. "Do we know you?" She pulled out a chair, meeting their skeptical gazes. "I'm Faith." Myra scoffed. "Oh, great. So, you're here to tell us everything will magically work out if we just believe hard enough?" Faith chuckled. "Not quite. I don't deal in magic. I deal in movement." Jonas leaned back. "And what exactly does that mean?" Faith's expression softened. "It means I'm the bridge between where you are and where you need to be. You've abandoned hope because it felt unreliable. You've clung to determination, but without hope, it's exhausting. You're stuck because you don't know how to trust either." Jonas clenched his jaw. "And what? You're supposed to fix that?" Faith shook her head. "Number you are. I'm just here to remind you that you still can." Myra exhaled sharply. "You're saying we should just have faith? That's the whole solution?" Faith tilted her head. "Not blindly. That's the mistake people make. Faith isn't about waiting for proof. It's about taking the next step, even when you can't see the whole path." Jonas sighed. "And if we fall again?" Faith leaned forward. "Then you get up. You pivot. You adjust. But you don't quit. That's what determination is for, to push. And that's what hope is for, to remind. But neither can function without me." Silence stretched between them. Finally, Myra spoke. "So, if we walk with faith, hope won't feel like a lie." Faith smiled. "Hope was never the lie. Your fear of being disappointed again was. But now, you get to choose differently." For the first time in years, Jonas and Myra felt something shift. They didn't fully understand it yet, but they knew one thing. They had been waiting for permission to move forward, and Faith had just given it to them. As they stepped outside, the city felt different. Not because it had changed, but because they had. The road ahead was still unclear, but for the first time in a long time, they were willing to take the next step, because this time, they weren't just chasing hope. They were walking with faith. Jonas and Myra had crossed the bridge, but now came the real test, putting faith into action. They sat in Myra's living room, notebooks sprawled across the table, laptops open, coffee cups half empty. The city outside buzzed with its usual rhythm, but inside, something new was taking shape. They had both abandoned their creative dreams once, but now they had an idea, a space where their words, music, and poetry could live and breathe together. A website, a hub, a movement. It felt right, but it also felt terrifying. "I don't even know where to start," Jonas admitted, rubbing his temples. "I mean, we have all these ideas, but who's going to care?" Myra tapped her pen, against her notebook. And even if they do, how do we get it out there? I'm not some marketing genius. The familiar whispers of doubt crept back in. What if no one sees it? What if it's not good enough? What if this is another waste of time? Faith had led them this far, but determination and hope were still fragile. That's when Myra sighed and did something unexpected. She laughed. Jonas raised an eyebrow. What's funny? She shook her head. Us. We sound like two kids lost in a mall when all we have to do is ask for directions. Jonas smirked. And who exactly are we asking? Chapter 5. Blueprint for Success. Before Myra could answer, there was a knock at the door. Standing there was an old friend. Not a person, but a mindset. They called it strategy. Not flashy, not loud, just practical and persistent. You two look stuck, strategy said, stepping inside. Let's fix that. Jonas folded his arms. And how exactly do we do that? Strategy grinned. Simple. One step at a time. With strategy's guidance, Jonas and Myra started to see the bigger picture in smaller pieces. Step one, define the mission. What's the purpose of this website? Strategy asked. To share our creativity, Myra said. To inspire people who feel stuck like we did. Jonas nodded. And to prove to ourselves that we can actually follow through. Step two, identify the audience. Strategy leaned back. Who needs this? Who are you talking to? Jonas thought for a moment. People like us, creatives who've lost their way. And people who need something real to connect with, Myra added. Step three, start small, build momentum. You don't need the whole world to see you at once, Strategy said. You just need the right people to start paying attention. They brainstormed social media posts sharing their journey. Small performances, readings, to connect with local audiences. Consistent content, songs, poems, short stories, to keep people engaged. Step four, silence the doubt. Doubt's not going anywhere, Strategy admitted. But action is louder than fear. Jonas and Myra sat back, looking at their new plan. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't easy. But it was real. Jonas exhaled. All right, let's do this. Myra smirked. Now you're talking. As they got to work, something shifted again. Not just in their project, but in them. Jonas and Myra had taken Strategy's advice to heart. They started small, sharing readings, performing at local events, and posting content online. The feedback was positive, but something felt off. People said their work was interesting and nice. Listeners enjoyed it, but engagement wasn't growing. They weren't reaching the audience they knew was out there. At first, they rationalized it. Maybe things just took time. But in the quiet moments, when the excitement settled, doubt came knocking again. Had they expected too much, too soon? Had they miscalculated their impact? Had they set themselves up for disappointment? They kept reminding themselves of what they had learned. Faith, hope, determination. But something was missing. Chapter 6. Shifting Perspectives. And then, in the middle of one of their many brainstorming sessions, something clicked. Myra stared at the scattered notes on their table. "We've been creating for ourselves," she said slowly. "But maybe we need to create for them." Jonas frowned. "What do you mean?" She flipped through the notes. "We've been writing what feels good to us. But what if we start asking people what they actually want?" It was so simple, yet so game-changing. Instead of just writing and hoping people connected, they would involve their audience from the start. What kinds of stories did kids love? What social topics actually mattered to people? What did their audience need to hear, not just what they wanted to say? Jonas grinned. "So we stop guessing and start listening." They started talking to others, kids, parents, teachers, community leaders. They asked about interests, struggles, dreams, and everyday experiences. And the responses blew them away. Kids wanted exciting, fun, and adventurous short stories. Parents wanted wholesome stories that also taught life lessons. Communities wanted social statements that reflected real-world issues. Older adults wanted stories of healing, aging, and resilience. Even small groups of fishermen had stories they wanted to be told. Jonas chuckled. "Who knew fishing stories would be in demand?" Myra laughed. "People love a good fish tale." But beyond the humor, they had clarity. This wasn't about changing their dreams. It was about expanding their vision. At first, Jonas and Myra's efforts felt like throwing pebbles into a vast ocean. There were ripples, but nothing big enough to make waves. They hosted small readings, shared their work in community spaces, and even posted their stories and poetry online. But the response, while positive, was underwhelming. Doubt started creeping in again. "Maybe we're not meant for this," Myra admitted one evening, staring at their quiet website analytics. Jonas, equally frustrated, wondered aloud, "Did we expect too much too soon?" But then, in the middle of one of their brainstorming sessions, they realized the problem. They weren't meeting people where they were. They needed a new strategy, not a new dream. Instead of waiting for an audience to come to them, they went to the audience. They started engaging directly with readers and listeners by inviting them into the creative process. They held live storytelling events, asked for topic suggestions, and made interactive content, partnering with local schools and libraries to get their children's stories in front of young readers. Writing about real-life struggles, focusing on topics like aging, mental health, family, and hope, themes that resonated with people's personal experiences, releasing short audio segments of their poetry and music online, making their work more accessible in an era of quick consumption. Once they shifted their approach, everything changed. More people began to engage, share, and respond. Emails started rolling in from people who connected deeply with their work. A school invited them to speak. A publishing platform reached out about a potential collaboration. It was happening, and it felt real this time. As Jonas and Myra reflected on their journey, they realized that the process of reclaiming their lost dreams had changed them in ways they never anticipated. Jonas, once skeptical of his own abilities, recognized how much fear had held him back. He had always convinced himself that timing, circumstances, or resources were the barriers, but deep down, he had been afraid of failure. Now, after pushing through self-doubt and setbacks, he felt a sense of resilience he had never known before. There was a newfound confidence in his steps, an understanding that progress was not measured in leaps, but in steady movement forward. For Myra, the journey had been equally transformative. She had long believed that she needed external validation to prove her work was meaningful. Every rejection, every moment of silence after she shared something, had chipped away at her belief in herself. But now, standing on the other side of that struggle, she saw things differently. She had come to understand that her creativity, her voice, had value, regardless of immediate recognition. She no longer measured her success solely by how many people noticed, but by how deeply she connected with what she created. That shift in mindset gave her a sense of freedom she hadn't felt in years. They both had to face uncomfortable emotions, frustration, doubt, and the temptation to quit. But as they embraced determination and worked alongside hope and faith, they learned that the struggle was part of the process. It was through wrestling with their doubts that they uncovered their strength. It was in moments of discouragement that they found clarity. And so, with renewed energy and a clearer understanding of themselves, Jonas and Myra prepared for what came next. The road ahead would not be easy, but they now had the tools to navigate it. They had faith in their journey, trust in their abilities, and an unwavering determination to keep going. Time would tell how far they would go, but for now, they knew one thing. They were no longer lost. Chapter 7. Recommendations for those on a similar path. Acknowledge your fears. Understand what's holding you back and confront it. Redefine success. Find value in your work beyond external validation. Embrace the struggle. Growth happens through challenges, not in their absence. Seek community. Surround yourself with those who uplift and challenge you. Keep moving forward. Even small steps count. Persistence makes the difference. Your journey is your own, but you are never truly alone in it. So, what's your next step? You've likely heard it said that the destination is clear, but it's the journey, the struggle, the growth, the transformation that stories are made of. In the journey, you discover yourself, and in the end, a decision must be made. Even choosing not to decide is, in itself, a decision. What have you learned from your own journey? How have struggles shaped your path? If this message resonates with you, pass it on. Someone else may need to hear it too. Jonas and Myra will be back. Their journey isn't over, and neither is yours. You have heard it said before that the destination is clearer. However, the journey and the process of getting there is what movies and books are made of. Find yourself in the journey and know that a decision is inevitable. For even not to decide is to decide not to decide. Until then, what's your next step? To be continued.